In the 1970s, a future, top-notch podcasting team was born, and then raised on military bases because their dads were in the Air Force. These Gen Xers eventually grew up and were unleashed upon the world. Today, looking forward to retirement, they survive by dishing out their opinions. If you have questions that need answers and an open mind, if you can spare 60 minutes a week, and if you have internet access, maybe you can listen to Kenyetta and Jack Save the World.
All right, sweethearts, you heard the man and you know the drill. Assholes and elbows. You know who else knows the drill? Us. Your Chalber 2, your dynamic duo. And we're here to save the world one episode at a time. Damn it, we're tired. Whew. Anyway, I'm Kenyetta. One gentleman over there is Jack. The other gentleman over there is our guest for this episode. And we'll introduce him in a second. First, though, there's something I have to get off my chest. It's supposed to be a mini WTF. We don't have to discuss it for long, but I gotta say it. Before I do, though, gentlemen, say hello.
Hello.
Okay.
It took a minute because you said gentlemen and it threw me off.
You're only gentlemen on the weekends, I know. Okay.
Right? I mean, that's when a true gentleman drinks, right?
Correct. Correct. So, as Jack knows, I am hip deep in threads as of late. It's a fun place to be. It's like the platform formerly known as Twitter was before it went gross. So, Paul McCartney, that guy, you know, he was with that one band that did them songs. He's got a threads account now, and he makes a post and says, quote, "I am so happy with Beyoncé's version of my song Blackbird. I think she does a magnificent version of it, and it reinforces the civil rights message that inspired me to write the song in the first place. I think Beyoncé has done a fab version and would urge anyone who has not heard it yet to check it out. You are going to love it. I spoke to her on FaceTime and she thanked me for writing it and letting her do it. I told her the pleasure was all mine and I thought she had done a killer version of the song. When I saw the footage on the television in the early 60s of the black girls being turned away from school, I found it shocking and I can't believe that still happens in these days. There are places where this kind of thing is happening right now. Anything my song and Beyoncé's fabulous version can do to ease racial tension would be a great thing and makes me very proud." So, backstory, unless you guys have been under a rock, you know, Beyoncé dropped her recent album last Friday. Everybody's been a buzz. I've listened to it several times. I'm not a stan, but it's some good shit. Anyway, she and I believe it's three or four other black female country singers do a cover of the Beatles' Blackbird, which you just heard Paul McCartney say, "I wrote it because of things that were going on in the civil rights movement." And he's referring specifically to the Little Rock Nine. And me and Jack did an episode about that a while back. That was his inspiration for writing the song. This is the audacity of the people on threads. And this makes for good fun. This guy who nobody knows, who has 9 followers, says, quote, "I just listened to it and found it ordinary." He's talking about the cover version. "The beauty of the song has always been that it applies to everyone, non-racial. This regardless of how you composed it and the influences of the time." That's like telling Michelangelo, "Yeah, I know you painted the Sistine Chapel for this reason, but I'm going to tell you what it really means."
Right. Or the guy that told Stephen King that he didn't know what The Stand was about.
The fuck?
Yeah, you haven't heard that?
Who told Steve? Is that a true story?
Yeah. You can go look it up. Yeah, it's on Twitter or something, because he was saying something when the pandemic started about how this is, I think it was The Stand. One of Stephen King's books, and the guy was like, "I don't think you understand what The Stand is about." Stephen King's like, I wrote the book. I'm pretty sure I do.
The Stand is exactly what he said it was about. It is a plague that literally kills 98% of the population. And then it becomes a battle between good and evil. What else? That's it.
Right.
That's the story. Dear God. But yeah, the audacity.
Yeah, how dare Paul McCartney tell you what he was thinking when he wrote that song? That bastard. No wonder John Lennon let Yoko Ono into his life.
Oh, Jesus. She broke up the band. But yeah, that's my WTF. The utter audacity of those keyboard warriors that hide behind their screens and have the nerve to tell famous people, legendary famous people, no, that's not what you really meant.
Yeah.
I had to get that off my chest when I just read that literally an hour ago. I was like, no. No. So that's what I got. That's what I got.
All right.
Short and to the point. So,
yeah. Starting off with a little laughter is always a good thing to do.
Yeah.
Especially for this next WTF. Mm. So I'll just go ahead and introduce our guest. His name is Kane Stevens. He's the host of the Kane Stevens Super Show podcast, which I have been a guest on now twice. The first one, we talked a little bit about how Mars Mission Foundation came about. And then we talked about some wrestling and all sorts of other stuff. And then the second one was a special Pink Floyd episode, a topic that I hardly know anything about. But now he's coming on our show and we're going to talk about some aspects of his life and how he got into podcasting and everything. But today he gets to do a special super duper guest WTF. So Kane, say hello and let's get into your WTF.
Well, hello to both of you. Thank you guys for having me on the show. I'm excited to do this. This WTF, because honestly, it literally had me slamming my palm against my head as soon as I saw it. So, and I think a lot of, I don't know if it's going to affect everybody on the show that way, but I can't wait to hear what everybody's take is. But my WTF is really just Sean Puffy Combs, P. Diddy. What the hell is going on in your life that you started to do this? I mean, why did you start this? How long have you been sex trafficking? Why are you ruining my childhood? Why are you doing this to me? So that's where I want to start. What do you guys think about it? It makes me completely ill. I mean, I can't even go back and listen to, you know, Mo Money, Mo Problems, or, you know, any song that he appeared on with P. Diddy, you know, not P. Diddy, but with Notorious B.I.G., because I'm just like, I just don't understand it, man. Like, I never thought this was that guy.
Yeah. I do know previously, like, Kenyatta had said that she had suspicions about P. Diddy, and then the Cat Williams thing, I think, also maybe confirmed it in Kenyatta's mind. But I want to kind of know where you got that suspicion from before the Cat Williams thing, and how are you feeling about it now, Kenyatta?
Okay, so what was it, December or November, when his ex-girlfriend and former artist, his Cassie, she was minding her own business somewhere. She's had a beautiful life since she left that man. I'm thrilled for her. But she came out of nowhere and said, Sean Puffy P. Diddy Love Combs did things, and he gots to pay. And instead of fighting it, he paid. Literally within 48 hours of her breaking the news, he paid. Nobody in celebrity world defended him. Because usually, if someone comes out and accuses person A of some horrible things, person C, D, E, F, G, through M, they never did that. How can you say that? That's a bunch of crap. That's libel and slanderous. Nobody came out and defended Combs. Nobody. And he paid. He paid. Because he knew if he tried to fight it in the courts, more shit was going to come out. And that's why he paid, because he thought he stemmed the flow. I don't care what you say. he already knew there was more stuff to come. It was just a matter of time. And I'm just sure he sat wherever he was sitting for all these months, just his palms just sweating, just it's coming, coming. And it came. Like, you know, the Phoebes don't mess with people for shits and giggles. So if there's allegations that he's involved in sex and drug trafficking, they're not making it up, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, yeah.
I never really cared for him at all. Like, and I'm with you, Kane. Like, he's just ruined my teenage years, my teenage and college years. Like, Bad Boy was all over the place, you know, Biggie and Total and Faith and Craig Mack and Shine, who we all know went to jail instead of Puffy for the shooting at the nightclub all those years ago. We know it. We all know it. He threw him under the bus and let him rot in prison. But that's another story. But I haven't liked Combs for a very long time. Not to mention his head is shaped like a football. So.
Thank goodness I like Death Row Records better. Thank goodness I followed a model citizen like Suge Knight.
Yeah. Squeaky clean pillar of society. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed.
I think they're making Suge Knight look good.
I think I would only be afraid of Suge Knight more than Mike Tyson. You know what I mean? Like, I think Suge Knight and Mike Tyson are up there as like the guys that you should fear the most.
Probably. I think you would only have to fear Tyson if you get on his bad side.
Yeah.
As when Jake Paul has.
I mean, you know, we'll see. But I remember what was that incident on the plane where he got in somebody's face, and I'm like, they done pissed off Mike Tyson. Do they have a death wish, or, you know, just checking. But yeah. I you're right. I wouldn't want to tick him off, but Suge Knight will do stuff to you just because he can. You don't have to make him mad. You just have to be in the way. And he will run you over. He will run you over and then back up and run.
And then back up and run you over again just to make sure.
And then claim I'm legally blind in court as his defense.
Right. Yeah. When I got out of the car and I accidentally kicked him in the head 4 times after running over him 8 times, I thought it was a cantaloupe.
Oops, my bad.
Well, you know, the crazy thing about all of this is like that, like you were mentioning the Cat Williams, like the Cat Williams interview, even on the Joe Rogan show not too long ago. I mean, he was talking about being, the whistleblowers are coming out this year. They're going after these people, and everybody looks at Cat like, oh, he's nuts. You know, he says a lot of outlandish things. I think Cat might be one of the most honest people out there. I think he's telling the truth about everything except for all those books that he might have read. I don't know about that. I'm not saying he don't read. I'm just saying the amount of books, that blew my mind.
It did. Same. I had to roll back the interview and say, how many books a year, Cat? Okay. But yeah, I'm with you. That man, for the most part, for these last few years, he has stayed quiet and bothered nobody. I mean, he had a stretch of time where he was just all over the place. And yeah, people dragged him. And he dragged himself. He said, I knew I did some things. But he's been quiet like the last 3-4 years. Yeah. And then all of a sudden he pops up with that amazing jacket and all these secrets. And I'm like, I'm here for it. He's not lying. I'm just waiting. I'm like, you can. I'm waiting for it to come down on everybody now.
Yeah, really. Who's next? That's what I'm wondering is, like, who else? Like, they're ruining our childhood with all these different things, right? The Nickelodeon stuff.
Ugh.
It's like, what are they going to ruin? Like, are all of our heroes from when we were younger? And I'm not necessarily saying that P. Diddy was my hero. But I'm just saying in general, I mean, are all these people going to come out as, you know, dirty, nasty, you know, just doing the most horrible stuff? Is it all going to come to light here in this year?
I think so. I think this is like the year of reckoning on a multitude of degrees and people and scenarios. Reckoning.
Yeah.
It's coming.
Yeah. And Kane and I were talking pre-show and, you know, some about the Nickelodeon stuff and the P. Diddy. And I was just saying, you know, if you are a a child predator or just a predator of people in general, you are going to seek out jobs that give you an opportunity to be around your prey.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you have money that makes it easier to hide what you're doing,
mm-hmm.
then it's even, it almost creates no limits because you can afford to be, I know it sounds horrible, but you can afford it. And like on the Nickelodeon thing, if you're a child predator and you're in that industry, you are going to naturally be drawn to shows that have lots of children on them for that reason.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it happens in other areas too. In 2023, there were over 700 people affiliated with various churches that were arrested for molesting children just last year. And a mm-hmm. lot of times they were youth pastors. Well, once again, if that's what you want to do, being a youth pastor is something that gives you easy access. And so it's just horrible.
And then what's even worse, like being in the like you said, a youth pastor in a religious setup, it's even worse because people are 10 times more likely to take your word over the word of a kid.
Yeah. Like
how in the world could he be capable of something that hideous? There's no way. Oh, yes. There's a way.
Yeah. Yeah. For me, the anger and the outrage is always the cover up, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because you can do background checks and it's not like somebody when you're doing the job interview, if you've said, have you ever raped a child? They're going to go, oh, yeah, like 6 times, right? And when you do the background check, that's the kind of thing that, strangely enough, doesn't appear on the background check.
Hmm.
So when it happens, if you were to come out, I don't care what the business is, the industry, church, whatever. If when it happens and it's found out, if you come out immediately and you have a press release, hey, this person, we did a background check. We interviewed. We had no idea. As soon as we found out, we fired this person and reported them over to law enforcement. People will respect that.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's the cover up that I get that infuriates me. Once again, doesn't matter the business, but if you just sort of fire the person and then ship them off elsewhere where they can do it again, now you're part of the problem.
Yeah. That's the part of that documentary that bugged me a lot too, was, you know, the first guy that they were talking about. He didn't even do what, 2 years in jail, some months in jail, and then popped out and went and worked for Disney and nobody checked.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
Well, especially with that guy, because they would have known because it made news at the time in, you know, California. So Disney would have known.
But back to Sean P. Diddy, Puffy, Love Combs. This is what I read somewhere on Facebook a couple weeks ago when this first all came out. I can't even think of the page I saw it on, but it was an interesting perspective. And this will in no way, my opinion here, in no way excuses or puts any kind of reasoning behind what he may have done or has been accused of, et cetera, et cetera. Because whatever they said he did that shit. But my opinion here is just based on what I read, and it was an interesting perspective. This person said, I can't say it verbatim, but the gist of it was, consider the fact of how Combs came into the industry. He was a, like an assistant. He was one of those guys that ran the streets and stuck the stickers for the music groups up on light poles and buildings. That's how he started, as an intern, a scrub. And then he went straight up. Someone made that possible for him. Someone like Moses parted the seas and allowed him to ascend. And they probably told him, look what I did for you. I'm making all your dreams come true, but you're going to owe me. And D's like, oh, okay, yeah, sure, 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 sure. And he makes his money and he gets his record label and he signs his groups and he does ridiculous things. And everybody, because he has money, That's a great silencer. People talk and people complain, like when he had the Making the Band show and he made that kid walk 56 blocks for some cheesecake. Everybody was like, that was horrible, but they still went on that damn show because it's money.
Right.
Like, he made people, like, the stuff we even heard about back then was ridiculous. And then, of course, the whole episode with the shooting at the club and how, you know, 87% of us believe that he did indeed throw Sean under the bus and he literally got away with it. But that was the stuff we heard. And I'm like, he's got all this money. He's still out here acting an ass. And I'm like, it's because he thinks someone is protecting him. He literally has nothing to lose because he thinks there's still somebody behind him or above him that's watching out and makes things go away. But now that person calls in some favors. I did all this for you. I made all your dreams come to you, and you make millions of dollars and you have absolutely nothing else you have to do with your life but sit there and be ridiculous. Now there's something you need to do for me or else I just pull the rug out from under you. The stuff that he's being accused of, that's what I think he's being made to do by someone way, way higher up than him. I know it sounds preposterous. I'm not a conspiracy theorist. You know this, Jack, but I'm saying, like, like you said, Kane, like, how long has he been doing stuff like this? Because, like, people in the know, you know, in the industry knew what he was like. The general, you know, general public at large didn't really know until last year. And I read the report of, you know, her accusations. It was some horrible shit. And I'm like, if that's what made it out, imagine what isn't making it out.
Well, and
I said, it's money and it's influence, not from him, but from people that are protecting him because they needed him for something down the road. And now they've called the favor in and now he's taking the fall for it. And no, I don't feel sorry for him. Not one bit. And my theory may be way off, but regardless, whatever they said he did that shit.
Yeah. I always have a sort of a theory that if 10 people come out with an accusation against somebody that they did whatever, that's like maybe 5%. So if 10 people come out, there's another 100 that had the same thing happen to them. They just aren't going to come out, you know, for whatever reason. And if you're a victim of something like that, I cannot fault you if you do not want to come out and tell your story, especially something that like happened 20 years ago, because that's life-changing stuff. And you might just now be getting to the point to where you've, you know, got therapy and are kind of moving past it. So I can understand why people don't come out, you know, after something like that has happened. So, you know, if it's like, oh, 10 people are coming out with this, all right, that number is much higher, you know, every time I think that. So yeah. I would imagine in this case, it might be numbers that make, you know, R. Kelly look like amateur hour.
Because they're saying ever since the news about Cassie broke, you know, there's been all sorts of stories about who he's supposedly been involved with. Like, you know, rumors coming out that he's bi and that he supposedly was messing around with Meek Mill, who used to date Nicki Minaj. There's all that coming out now. So I think in this case with him, maybe there's probably a good 72% truth to all of this. Some of it's obviously been over-exaggerated just because of who it is, but there's a whole bunch of truth to this. So, like I said, the thieves don't show up at your door for no reason. And they knew he wasn't going to be there. So that's why they showed up. They don't do that for fun. That's our tax dollars. They can't waste it just showing up for fun.
Right?
I was wondering if he had anything to do with Tupac's death. You know what I mean? Like, that's something I've always, you know, I've watched, you know, all of the, you know, different docs on that and everything. And I always wondered if he was behind that with, you know, if it was the gang members that were hired to do it or whatever. I always wondered if maybe Bad Boy was behind that. I mean, what do you think that, you know, maybe he's always been horrible, right?
I'm inclined to agree that he's always been horrible. And his horribleness started real minor and just grew and grew and grew. The more money he got and the more stuff he got away with. it just got worse and worse and worse and worse. I mean, there's been rumors out for years that he had something to do with Kim Porter's death, the mother of three of his children. Three of his children. Four. Three. What did she die? What, 4 years ago? 5 years ago? And they said it was a horrible case of pneumonia. But now people are saying that he might have something to do with that because she was getting ready to tell it. And then last week I heard, I'll be sure. He had been in the hospital a year or two ago with some really serious health problems. And he's saying, I'm going to tell y'all the reason why I ended up the way I did. Like everybody's like saying some stuff now. And I'm like, whoa, wait a minute. Just like you said, yeah, there's way too many people saying the similar kinds of stories that they got on his wrong side, or they're getting ready to say some stuff, and somebody stepped in and tried to make that not happen. So I'm with you, Kane. I think I do think he had something to do with Tupac. They said supposedly they said the guy that was the trigger man died some years ago, but I don't believe anything law enforcement says in regards to him or Biggie. But I did hear that the stronger rumor was he did have something to do with Biggie, because at some point he realized that Biggie would be worth more unalive than alive. That's the rumor I heard. I'm like,
It's similar to like Harvey Weinstein, where all of a sudden, it starts coming out and there are all these different, people with an almost identical story of what happened to him. And, once again, you get money and power, people have to kiss your ass. If you're already like that, it's just going to make it worse.
So it's not like I'm eager to see what happens in the months, coming up, but yeah, the fact that this story made national news, oh my gravy. I'm not looking forward to it, but I am looking forward to it, if it makes sense.
Yeah, no, I get it.
I don't want to hear people talk about trauma that he may have put them through. I don't want to hear that part. But I'm like you, King. I'm like something else is coming. It's gonna start like a trickle, and then it's just gonna end up like Niagara Falls.
Yeah, it'll definitely be interesting to see who Cat Steven or Cat Steven Cat Williams talked about that's gonna come out next.
Trying to think. Let's see. Talk about Ricky Smiley, and Ricky came up and denied everything.
Yeah, there was
There
some
was
what is it, Madea? What's her, Tyler Perry? He
type.
talked
Oh
about
yeah. I
I can't remember, did he say something about Oprah too?
remember. I feel like I want to go and watch it again. Did
But
you watch that,
yeah,
Ken?
I didn't know.
Oh God. If you have 2 hours and 40 minutes to set aside, look it up. It's Shannon Sharp, the ex-NFL player. He does a show called Club Shay Shay, and he brings on every celebrity you can think of. And he had Kat on back in January. And he sits, it's like a, it looks sort of like what do you think a rich man's study would look like, with some leather couches and some fireplaces and some good cognac. And then they sit and talk. So yeah, Cat came on like the first week in January. He kicked off 2024 most righteously.
Yeah, and it was like, Shannon was like, "Hey, Kat, how you doing?" And he was like, "I'm doing fine. Have you ever heard that Cedric the Entertainer is a complete joke-stealing asshole?" That was how he started. And then he was like, "Wait, what?" He's like, "Let me tell you how this happened." And it like just ran from there.
2 hours and 40 minutes non-stop. Stop. Like when he said, if Diddy comes and invites you to go party, don't go. I died. I absolutely died.
Yeah.
So,
I would
yeah.
definitely get into that. I know I've seen some clips of it. I more recently watched the, like I was saying, the Joe Rogan interview, which was a long one. And I just thought, man, dude was spitting fire, but he was telling a lot of truth that people weren't ready to hear. So I like Cat Williams. I mean, I actually became a bigger fan of him through that interview just because I thought, man, this guy has to be a an evil genius of some sort.
You would think so. I've seen him live once. That was way back in 2007. Yeah, he came here on a show, and it was, a matter of fact, it was around Mother's Day. So I treated myself and I went to go see Cat Williams. When I tell you, out of all the comedy shows I've seen, I have never laughed so hard. I laughed, I cried. Someone's gotten a fight like way up in the nosebleed seats, and he stopped the show and said, "Y'all all right up there?" Like, it was hilarious. He is funny. He's shorter than you think in person.
The funny thing was, he came to OKC in February after, you know, he was on Shannon Sharpe's deal, and I was like, it would be great to go, but I have a feeling now that the secondary ticket market for Cat Williams is probably really, really, really out of my price range now.
Truly. Truly. Like, for, I think he may have come back here once or twice since then, which kind of makes me sad because I really need him to come back more often. So,
yeah.
Well, but any final thoughts, gentlemen?
I'm good. I'm just going to sit and watch what happens and do a lot of head shaking. You, Kane?
I think we covered it well, honestly. And I do look forward to shaking my head a lot and wondering why you do this to us.
Basically, I feel about him now the way I felt about R. Kelly ever since all that shit dropped. And he's another one that people in the know knew about him forever, especially in Chicago. Like, I hear told that he would stake out the high schools in the afternoon when the kids were getting out of class.
Oh my. Yeah.
And I told you about the concert I went to, Jack.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'll tell you, Kane. So my parents moved here on Earth. My dad was still active duty back in 90. They came here in 94. And I came to visit on my summer break from school. And it just so happened that Salt and Pepper and R. Kelly were on tour. And I think R. Kelly had just come out with 12 Play. So he was the opening act for Salt and Pepper. So I got a ticket and I went. And he was doing, because y'all know he had like a band before he went solo called The Public Announcement. So he did a couple of songs that were done with Public Announcement. Then he did some songs off of 12 Play. That was the album that had Sex Me and Bump and Grind. It was one of those two songs that was playing. He was getting ready to start playing. And two guys from his entourage went to either side of the stage with these big old huge like poster boards that said 18 and over. And they held him up so everybody in the crowd could see it. I was like, ew with your disclaimer. What the hell? And I've thought about that all the time since then. So when all this news came out about him, what happened with him and Aaliyah, and then all this stuff with all these other women, I'm like, you have ruined 90s R&B for me, you son of a bitch. Because if he didn't sing it, he wrote it.
Right. Yeah. So,
there it is.
Yeah. Well, let's move on from our WTF. And I mean, we had Kane on to talk more about other things as well. So Kane is a man who's done, held, worn many hats through the years. He's a podcaster. He's been in cover bands. He's a musician. He's a paranormal investigator. He's a lover of professional wrestling, horror movies. You can't see this because, you know, obviously we don't post on YouTube or anything, but where he's currently at, the background there is nothing but instruments and albums on the wall. So let's see, there's drums, guitars, a keyboard.
Lots of guitars that you can't see.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, why don't you just give us like the Cliff Note version on sort of what you did, what got you into podcasting, and then we can, because we wanted to talk to you about the paranormal investigating portion of your life.
Well, I mean, I was an athlete growing up, but I was also really big into music. You know, I was kind of like one of those, I don't know, kind of like popular fat kids that kind of like you that kind of like had everybody at my disposal. You know, I was friends with the musicians, the jocks, everything. And so, you know, once I kind of got into college, I was going to go to college for broadcasting. You know, I got a football scholarship. You know, things were all good in the hood. And then, you know, I was going to go for broadcasting, get into radio. And then, oh, yeah, Kane started partying far too hard. Not really caring about football anymore, caring more about girls and drinking and drugs and all that stuff. And I ended up dropping out, and I immediately, you know, dad kind of put it to me like, well, you got to do something. You know, I was an electrician all these years. You should be one. So then I was like, okay, I'll be an electrician. So I did that for a long time. Along the way, I decided to, you know, be a musician, teach myself how to play guitar. I've been a singer my whole life, and I just kind of just keep rolling forward on all this stuff. So, you know, as I fast forward through things, I have heart problems 3 years ago. I almost died 3 years ago. I had heart failure. My AFib was so out of control that they tried shocking it back into, you know, rhythm. It would not go back. They tried everything, ablations, nothing worked. So now I have a pacemaker as well. So I had to quit, you know, being, you know, I'm basically, you know, I'm disabled due to my heart now. So I was like, well, I've got to do something. I can't just sit here and do nothing. Like, I can't perform live out on stage anymore as a musician. And so I just thought, what? Why not? Why not do podcasting? Why not do what I love? And that's really how I got into it. I got into that. My heart started feeling better with medication. My pacemaker is making me feel good. And I've just been kind of living out all these dreams. I mean, I've always been into the paranormal. I've always been kind of a ghoul when it comes to that. And I just kind of kept rolling into situations where people started listening to my podcast where I talked about before. It wasn't the super show. It was the paranormal super show. And so I talked about nothing but paranormal. And I'd get the craziest guests, and we do that. And pretty soon people started asking me to go on investigations with them. And I took them up on it, and I haven't really looked back since. I've been doing my own investigations with my own team called Debunked Paranormal here in Lincoln. And it's been pretty fun. I've had a pretty crazy life.
Where was your football scholarship at?
You know, it was at a small college, at Concordia here in Nebraska.
Anytime you're good enough to get a scholarship for any sport, it doesn't matter the size of the school. Mm-hmm. That's in my mind, that's a pretty impressive thing, because that's still something that, like, what, less than 2% of the U.S. population gets to do. Yeah. So if you, to me, the size of the school doesn't matter. The fact that you got the scholarship is pretty cool. Plus, college is expensive, so I'm sure your parents were happy about that.
They were, but they were less happy when I blew the scholarship and left
school. That's a different episode.
Yeah.
Sames. I didn't do sports, but sames. So
it's probably for the best, you know. I mean, I know life trajectories. I know that we all have, like, I don't believe that anything is like by chance. I truly believe the older I get that everything was kind of meant to be that way. And maybe that's kind of a, you know, not everyone believes that, but that's just my personal opinion. Like, I talk to a lot of mediums on my show and all this stuff, and whether I believe some of the stuff they say or not is irrelevant, but what they say is very enlightening to me, as they kind of make me see that, you know, everything kind of syncs up in its own way. And so that's kind of what I've been looking at, is like, all the bad things that happen to me all happen for a reason, so that good things can happen to me. I mean, right now I'm talking to you guys on a podcast, whereas I wasn't even podcasting, you know, so many years ago. And, you know, if it wasn't for my stupid heart doing stupid things, I wouldn't be here right now. So I appreciate, you know, I appreciate life. I appreciate every day that I get to talk to people like you guys.
And we appreciate that you're here to talk to us. So there's yes. That.
Yeah.
That so, is interesting.
Oh, go ahead, Kenny.
No.
I was just going to ask, so what is like, as you've been out, what was like just, I don't know, the creepiest, the oddest thing, you know, something where you were just like, oh, damn, you know, type thing that's happened to you that just sort of like sticks out as the one that you always have to talk about?
Well, this is one that I do always talk. I go on a lot of podcasts and they ask me this question. I love answering it because I think that it will give you some clarity as to why I'm into it. So I've always been into the paranormal, but I lived in a house with my family, you know, my wife, my kids, and it's an old Air Force base here in Lincoln. It's called Air Park. It's no longer an Air Force base, but the base housing's still out there. I grew up there pretty much my whole life, but this house in particular, from the second we got in there, it was strange all the time. Like we saw full figured shadows blocking out the darkness where you could see, like, you know, so you know what I mean? Like you ever sit in a room that's dark and you see a darkness that passes through it? I mean, it's terrifying, but we would see that. And so the night in particular, I was laying with my girls. They were real young. They had beds on both sides of me. And for whatever reason, they couldn't go to sleep without me, you know, patting on their back or just being in there, you know, having my hand. And so I would pat them on the back and I'd lay in between them and I'd watch like YouTube or whatever. And I felt something grab my ankle and pull me backwards in this room. And I was like, I hadn't fallen asleep. I was wide awake. I mean, it was completely terrifying and shocking. So I instantly whip around, thinking one of my girls, which is ridiculous because they're right next to me, I have my hand on their backs, is up, and I whip around and there's nobody behind me. My girls are fast asleep. There's absolutely nothing behind me. The door's shut. There's no one pranking me. And it was that moment, amongst a bunch of other things that happened in this house, that just completely enamored me with, I have to figure out what this is. Like, there has to be something to, like, the ghosts realm. Like, it's more than just kids' stories. So that was the defining moment to me on why I had to start chasing ghosts.
Was there anything, I mean, did you dig around in the history of that area to see who might have lived there and, you know, if there was an explanation of who that might have been?
I have. With my podcast, I started reaching out to the neighborhood and I noticed something which was strange, which was that people started, I would do every October, I do a Ghost-tober type thing called the Curse of Arnold Heights Air Park. And these people would start sending me these stories. I'm talking like from one side of this massive neighborhood to the other. There's no, like, if you started dotting it on the walls like the FBI, I mean, it's all over the neighborhood. People are talking about mirrors flying off their wall, being scratched, hit. I mean, every claim you can think of. I mean, creatures with red eyes. And it's not like, it's not like we're in Flint, Michigan drinking the bad water. You know what I mean? Like, this is a pretty normal neighborhood. It is a lower income neighborhood, right? Mm-hmm. Because of the base housing, because it's affordable through housing authority. But I mean, it's not like, I don't know how to describe it other than we lived out there everybody's pretty normal out there, but there's like a negative tone to this neighborhood, right? Like there's nothing but tragedy out there. I mean, I think this last year, a girl was reporting to me that there have been 3 suicides in the last, I would say, 6 months out there.
Oh, wow. And
there's just a massive history of tragedy. But like when I go digging into like the papers and all that, I mean, there's nothing that you could really put your hat on. I mean, it is old Native American land. Like there's a prairie next to it called Nine Mile Prairie. So you can only imagine. I mean, I'm not going to say that that's the reason. It could be like, Native American land, or it could be something else. It could just be like years and years of tragedy and negativity.
Yeah. Kenyatta and I are quite familiar with Air Force housing.
Mm-hmm. Now that we're long past being Air Force brats, now they make the housing look like houses.
Right.
But I was talking about something similar to what you just said, Kane, about areas having a certain kind of tragic energy, because I was in my favorite social space on Threads a couple months ago, and people were talking about this trend that these idiot people have about having weddings at Southern plantations. And people were like, how in the world can you have a celebration on a plantation knowing what happened there? They're like, oh, that happened so long ago, but it happened there. That's like, I can't imagine going to any area that was the site of that much tragedy and misery. Like, oh, I don't know, Auschwitz or Dachau or any specific place that you know that human misery was long term, and it didn't have to be on a mass scale. It could have been over the course of years. But I'm serious when I say spaces hold energy. And like you said, Ken, it may have not been some big episode. It may have just been strange freak things just happening, and it's concentrated. I believe that shit. I believe it.
I believe it fully. I mean, it's just, this area is just, it's just so strange. Like, I've done investigations out there where the houses are, I would deem extremely haunted. I mean, we did have things go, it's more than just like bump of the night. It's the, you know, instruments going off that shouldn't. I mean, we're doing the full deal. I mean, we're using it. We're trying to be as scientific as possible. We're not like Ghost Adventures, you know, Zach Baggett. We're not ripping our shirts off and, you know, screaming at nothing. But I mean, I've heard voices out of nowhere, you know, disembodied voices, females, where nobody, you know what I mean? Like, there's no explanation for it. I've just had so much activity out there. There has to be something going on. So, I mean, I was even trying to write a book about it at one time. I just didn't know if I could get the publishing for it. But I mean, I'd started like detailing out and kind of like, I don't know if you guys ever watched like a haunting on, you know, any of those channels. I think it used to be on Discovery. But basically, I was going to take all the stories that these people have turned into me and do kind of like a, you know, the faces and names are different, but the story is basically the same. So kind of do like a dramatized version of it, but tell the exact story just where it's palatable. Like, you know, you can't say, oh, Mike saw this. And, you know, you kind of have to like put it into context of how they're explaining it. So, I mean, the jury's out if we'll ever get that done. I've always wanted to be a author as well. So I really hope that I get this book done over time.
Nice. I'd read it. Shit.
My cousin, Jenny, she lives in a suburb of Chicago, and her husband of many, many years now, Tom, I don't know, 25, almost 30 years. He was a police officer, but he was on an A&E TV show called Paranormal Detectives that was about cops that go and investigate paranormal stuff. And he's told some, you know, interesting, some interesting things, you know, that he's sort of seen. But
have you guys ever experienced any paranormal? I mean, that you guys could speak of? I think I've asked you this, Jack, but,
you know,
like, think of the paranormal.
Well, at the time we ended up talking about sleep paralysis, but now that I think about it, at my grandma's house in Indiana, there was the basement. There was this back area that you would go into where the furnace was and all of that stuff. That area always creeped me out. Even when, you know, the lights were on in the middle of the day, it always weirded me out as a kid. And like, even as an adult, I didn't like going back there. And I don't know what it was about that sort of did that to me. But that's probably the most, you know, freaky thing that sort of kind of had that paranormal vibe to it for me. Other than the time I was camping and I was convinced that Bigfoot was standing outside of my tent when in fact it was just a deer eating grass. But
that's what he wanted you to think.
There may have been some right. There may have been some alcohol involved in that one. So.
So I have a story about that. Couple, actually. So Jack, you remember First Southern Baptist Church in Dell City? It's still there.
Yeah, I remember it because I went there.
Yeah. Didn't everybody? Okay. So this is when me and my mom and my mom's real close friend, all their family, we were all members. And we would go, you know, Sunday mornings, of course, occasionally Sunday evenings, occasionally Wednesdays. And I wanted to
say, you were lucky with the occasional.
I know. And I was in Sunday school. As a matter of fact, this is where I got my first Bible. I won an art contest and I got my first Bible in Sunday school. I was like second or third grade or something like that. Anyway, so for some reason, it was in the evening. I remember this. I can't remember if it was a Sunday or a Wednesday, but there was a couple of friends of mine we went over because there's the main sanctuary. And then at that time, there was another building that had the classrooms and admin and stuff like that. For some, I can't remember what we went over there for. We went over to the admin building. It was mostly empty. And I think we were on the second floor. I think somebody had left something in one of the Sunday school classrooms or something. So we went up there and we were ostensibly going for one thing, but we ended up being nosy and just running around all the building because kids. So we're coming out of the classroom and it's dark in the hallway and we're coming out giggling. We all turn and look down the hallway this way and we see something come out of like it's a T hallway. We see something come out from the left side of the hallway and just kind of float. And it was like white and greenish white and shimmery. And it just kind of floated. It looked people shaped, but we saw it float across the hallway and then it stopped and it kind of floated towards us. We beat feet out of that building like nobody's business. And we discussed it amongst ourselves later on. We were like, that couldn't have been anything. And then we were like, at church, we saw a ghost at church. So yeah, that was my first instance I could think of.
When I went through basic training, I went to Fort Knox, Kentucky, and I don't know why, but there was just this weird random thing where we went to this deal, this church hosted us there, and it was like an evening thing, and we went to it. You know, obviously there was some preaching or whatever, but when you're in basic training, anything that gets you away from being screamed at and doing push-ups by a drill sergeant, you're all for. You could be the most atheist person ever, but you're like, heck yeah, I'm going to church, you know, to get out of that. And so they took us into Louisville, Kentucky, and it was this church that was probably built in the, you know, 1890s or something. Beautiful, beautiful cathedral-esque church. And I was going through there and I was like, if ever there is a church that is haunted, it is this church. Because it was sort of like that picturesque, you know, thing that Hollywood would put out there as being haunted. That church would, it fit that description to a T.
Yeah,
but
man.
We obviously didn't see anything because, you know, what ghost is going to be want to come and mess with a whole bunch of untrained soldiers?
So that one got to me late. So Kane, how long have you been doing like the paranormal investigations?
You know, the paranormal investigations I've been doing kind of off and on for about, I would say 5 years. So I, you know, I've been around it and I, you know, like I did amateur investigating like a lot of kids do, you know, pretty much since I was in high school on, right? I mean, I'd go to places even as an adult and I would just kind of look around, but then I got more serious about it, you know, as I started having more people with resources and they started showing me all this equipment and how it works and like, oh, this is the stuff you see on TV and this is why they use it because it actually is a, you know, a scientific, you know, piece of equipment. But the thing is a lot of people that do it, like, especially when they watch TV, they don't understand like what they're looking at. They don't necessarily understand like what they're reading. So I would research and I would look at like the manufacturer stuff. And I would kind of look into like how they suggest you read this meter or how they suggest, cause I'm not just going to listen to some guy, but I'm just kind of that way. And so that's really how I got into it. I've been to some pretty, you know, there's a place in Villisca, Iowa called the Villisca Axe Murder House. And I don't know if you guys have heard of that.
Sounds charming.
The entire family in 1912 got axed to death. Everybody. Okay. Including their kids and the kids that were staying the night, and they never caught the person that did it. Okay. And so this story was so big that it actually took the papers off of the Titanic tragedy in 1912. This was the next big one. And then it was like, oh crap. Like now we have no idea who killed. And it was a big whodunit story, but I've been to this house many times. I'm actually going next week. And it's just, there's just something about this house. It makes the instruments go nuts. I built a spirit box myself because, you know, I'm a musician. I have a lot of equipment at my disposal. And I've gotten some of the strangest responses that come out of these things when you ask questions. And when you start to get answers to some of this stuff and you're sweeping radio signal back and forth, right, at a certain rate, yes, you can say, oh, that's just a radio station coming through. But when you actually get it, you go back and listen, you're actually getting an answer to your questions.
Hmm.
I think there's something there on that.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
So what type of, what is it that like the equipment sort of picks up on? Could you elaborate on that? Like what type of equipment, you know, the meters, what is it they're picking up on? That type of thing.
Radio frequency, they'll pick up on electromagnetic field. You know, so you can start to rule, especially me being an electrician for, you know, a career electrician, I can start to weed out some of the stuff that's going to cause the hysteria of electrical. And then I can start to put my, you know, the different meters and see where the electromagnetic frequencies are, because a lot of times where an electromagnetic frequency is, say like a panel box or a big panel room, it can cause a certain hysteria because there's a hum that comes to some of these things. And it can almost cause like a subconscious thing in your mind where you start to panic and you start to get anxious. And pretty soon you get that feeling that, oh my gosh, someone's watching me. A lot of times you can dispel all that stuff with just simple logic and reason and use it. So I would say this, when people listen to stuff like what I'm saying, is I want to make it clear, I don't believe that every place I go is haunted. Not even the places that people are saying is super haunted. I think that there's a logical explanation for most of it. But what I'm looking for is the stuff that there isn't a logical explanation for, where there's absolutely no power whatsoever in this area, but yet the meters are going through the roof. And that's the type of stuff. Or like there's certain sensors that you put out where they're basically proximity sensors. So if you wave your hand next to it, the sensor will go off. Mm-hmm. And it'll start causing, there's some called REM pods. There's all different types. And yes, you could have like a fly or something land on it and you could set, but usually if you're trained to do so and you're paying attention, which is what you should be when you're investigating, you can kind of dispel all that different stuff that might be getting in the way of it. So it really is just paying close attention to your instruments, what they're doing. And especially when they're, if you ask a ghost or whoever's there, if you ask them, can you move this device? And this device hasn't moved all day, right? Like you've been investigating all day long. Can you move this device to the red? Do that once for yes, make it blip twice for no, and it starts answering. I'm sorry, but I mean, what are the odds, right? What are the chances that when you ask that very question of, this or that, and it starts hitting that? I mean, I would say the odds are, one in a zillion. Mm. And that's the type of stuff that gets you going.
Yeah. Huh. Interesting. So Ouija boards, do you think that's a feasible method for contacting the other side? Have you had an experience with one of those that you felt was authentic?
I grew up around religion, but not being super religious. So the religious superstitious kind of comes, because I heard a lot of stories from pastors I knew. So I was always terrified, but I myself don't use them, but I have talked to many who have and do use them on a regular basis. So I can't say personally, because any time that I actually tried to use it, like say after high school, I always felt like the people around me were moving the planchette. I mean, when you're with kids, somebody's elbows are locked a certain way or something. And I just wasn't convinced until I could actually see it going on its own or something like that, that would be the, but I have yet to see that. I've heard stories of it, so I don't use the Ouija board, but I do think that it is a tool that can be used to communicate. And I don't think that it's all just talking to the devil either.
Right.
I think that we kind of got to dismiss that a little bit and say that not all spirits are evil.
Yeah. I mean, they said it in Sixth Sense. Some just want you to listen to them. They have something they need to tell you. I believe that. I think most spirits are like that. They just want to tell you something, or they're just not ready to go. I don't think there's a whole lot of them that are that malevolent, unless they're, so evil that they want to continue to be alive to inflict evilness upon people. But that's probably a real small percent.
I have a theory on, I mean, my theory, and people are probably going to think I'm completely nuts, that the, and I don't have a great theory other than I think that the spirit realm is this. I think the spirit realm is past, present, and future, all tying together. And I think that we'll never understand that until we're actually in the spirit realm. Because that would explain to me why this can happen all the time. Or like, you know, there's certain hauntings where people talk about, oh, all of a sudden I peered out the window and I saw a Victorian setting and I saw people in, you know, everybody, you know, there's a cobblestone road and I saw people in prairie outfits, and it's like they transcended to this. So to me, if that happened and they weren't, you know, they weren't high on whatever, on or whatever they're smoking, then I would say this, then they probably, the spirit is just trying to show them, you know, a literal windows view of what was going on at whatever time. Why they're doing it, I have no idea, but I do believe that when we die, it's all a conglomerate of the past, present, and future kind of mixed together.
I'll take that.
Yeah.
And just for the record, I asked about Ouija boards because I've never fooled with one. Most of the people I know haven't fooled with one because the Black community knows not to fool with Ouija boards. So I just want to know if you had any experience with that kind of thing.
I had a pastor tell me one time, it was a good friend of mine's dad. He, you know, he was a pastor and he would go to these different like conferences where different pastors, and he said that he witnessed full-blown possessions and people using the Ouija board. And he said he one time witnessed, and I don't know if this is just him scaring us, but he witnessed the board start on fire and literally lift up and shoot across the room. And and this guy was a credible guy to me. I thought this guy, you know, I never really thought this guy was that type of guy to lie. He was always a great person. And yeah, so I always took that as, yeah, I don't really need to mess with the Ouija board too much.
Yeah, no, not at all. Not at all.
So I was going to say real quick, talking about this and then with Beetlejuice coming out again, and then last weekend Hoarders was on. Somebody needs to make a TV show about a ghost that has OCD, like severe OCD, and the person that has moved into their house that they're like tied to and haunting is a hoarder. And it's just driving this ghost crazy, and all they're trying to do is just clean that. That's the entire haunting. They're just trying to clean the house.
That'll be my purgatory, I'm pretty sure. That's exactly what's going to happen to me, is I'm going to get launched into a hoarder's house, and I'm going to go completely crazy in the spirit world.
That's, yeah, and they're always like, hey, it was such a beautiful place, and they're just ruining it.
That's when you turn around, that whole stack of newspapers from 1957 is just on the floor. You know why. But going back to Stephen King, and it's interesting you said that, Kane, about people seeing, looking out and seeing what looks like a peek into the past. I know I'm a heavy Stephen King fan, no matter what people say about him. And I know in a lot of his books, of course, which are the supernatural, in certain instances, he talks about there are thin places in the world, that the veil between our reality and another one is really thin, and sometimes you can accidentally cross over into it. That's what that reminded me of when you said that. That's why I think, I heavy think there are some things that are really, really just outside our level of understanding. And oftentimes I think that's where they should stay. So, not to say, like, the curious side of me would want to go in and say, well, is what's happening in, you know, Karen's house a real thing? I would want to sit there, you know, with 10 other people around me and investigate this and see, is this a real thing? Or is there, like you said, some logical, scientific, practical explanation for this? So out of the cases that you investigated, Kane, what percentage would you say couldn't be explained?
Couldn't be explained. I would say out of all of them, and I have gone to a lot of places that are notoriously haunted though, but I would say probably about 10%, maybe. Mm. Even that would be completely unexplained. The rest of it can honestly be explained, or you could chalk it up as the people who you're investigating with, they could have done this. You always have to leave the skeptical person is the, and I am a skeptic. The thing is I'm a believer, but I'm the big boner killer of the group, right? Like when we go there, I will shoot down everything. Oh, I heard a scream, and I'll go, well, did she clear her throat over there? Did this happen? I'll come up with every reason why not, because I think that it's hurting the field of investigation if we all just walk in and instantly say it's haunted. There are investigators out there like that, and they're really hurting it. They're not finding any answers. They just believe everywhere is haunted. And I'm not that guy. So I would say, yeah, 10% might even be high. I would say probably less than that of actual, like, you know, truly. Like, I know that it's out there, but you really do have to look into it. It could be so much more. There could be, you know, mice in the walls. There could be so many different things. And until you start ripping the house down to the bare bones, you're going to have no idea what's causing it.
Yeah. That has always made me curious. Like, how often, like, I used to watch those paranormal shows a lot here and there. And then, of course, you know, there's countless movies and all that jazz. And I wonder, you know, if this isn't real, what could be causing, you know, the noises or the curtains blowing or, you know, the creak in the floorboards or whatever, whatever. And like you said, like a lot of those movies, you know, the medium or the investigator come in the house, be like, it's haunted. Be like the little lady in Poltergeist. There's a presence here. Just immediately, as soon as she comes in, you're like, we're leaving. Let's pack it up because we don't play around. Us folks, no. If something's going on, we're leaving. We're packing. Poltergeist wouldn't have happened if it was Black folks. As soon as the first thing went down, nope, mm-mm. Leave every, take what you can carry. We're leaving. Let's go. No, we don't fool around. We do not fool around. So to shift a little, Kane, Jack tells me you're a horror movie fan.
Yes, absolutely.
Oh my God.
I'm a man of many things.
Cause I are too. So what's your favorite off the top? What's your favorite horror movie?
Well, my favorite horror movies are the Friday the 13th series. I have Jason tattooed on my arm. I own a ridiculous amount of Friday the 13th, you know, gear. I used to have a lot of memory. I always loved the slasher flicks, and I know they're not scary unless you're a little kid, but I've always kind of, I don't know what it is. Anything in camp where people are getting hacked up is good for me. And I never went to camp. So maybe it's just my eternal wish to go to camp someday. And I live vicariously through Jason Voorhees.
I've been camping a couple of times when I was in Girl Scouts, and that's literally how we would mess each other up. I mean, that's like a written rule when you go camping. You have to tell scary stories, and then you have to do jump scares. If you're not doing that, you're not doing camping right.
And I've camped, but I haven't been to camp. You know what I mean? Like, I haven't been to, like, go to a camp where everybody gets up at the same thing. You know what I mean? Like, I used to walk around the woods with the Jason mask on and a little hatchet to scare people when I was younger. And I kind of have the body type for Jason, my friends always say. So it was like, it was perfect, but I can't believe I didn't get shot, to be honest with you.
Good Lord.
when my son was 10, one of his friends, his dad and I took a bunch of their friends and we went camping one night. Or for a weekend. And so I went through this elaborate deal. I went and downloaded this deal, you know, burned the CD, took it out there. And that first night, it was dark. We were around the campfire. And I started telling, you know, these boys about this scary story and just went into all this detail. And there was a lot of, like, you know, homages to Jason Voorhees and all of that. And so then, like, I'm sure you guys are wondering why I have this radio here. They actually recorded the sound of the beast before it started murdering people. And at this point, these boys are just like, they're buying it. They're in it. And then I pushed play and it started going, I love you, you love me. It was the Barney theme with Barney singing it. And it took about 20 seconds. And then they were like, oh, man, you had me going.
That's funny.
I thought about that forever. But I always loved Hellraiser.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the first two.
Yeah.
Because I really used to dig Clive Barker. So I was excited to see that first Hellraiser. Then the second one, I was like, okay. And then after that, I was like, no more. I cannot. Yeah.
The first two were good. Well, for the genre, the third one and the fourth one. And then I don't even know how many they've made since then. And didn't they make like a TV show where Pinhead's now a woman?
Yeah, they did. I think there were five or six more movies.
Yeah.
I just watched one a couple weeks ago, and I swear it was the stupidest thing in the world. Ugh.
Yeah, I always thought Pinhead is who Freddy and Jason and Michael Myers would have been afraid of.
Probably. Yeah, he haunts their dream. That's what that is.
Yeah. I always thought at the end of Freddy versus Jason, that's where they screwed up, was it should have ended with, like, you know, the Pinhead chains coming and getting both of them. And, you know, some sort of corny ass line, you know, because Pinhead was good with the one liners, you know, of like, welcome to my nightmare. Or, mm-hmm. You know.
we have such sights to show you.
Yeah. You know, welcome to Camp Nightmare, you know, something along those lines. And I felt that would have been the ultimate way to even that would have just upped that movie a couple more on the scale. Because, I mean, it wasn't super great, you know, but that would have definitely made it worth it, just that ending alone.
That's an interesting perspective. But speaking of camping, one of my favorites in the last, I think it was in the last decade, it might be older than that, is Cabin in the Woods. I don't know where they got the idea. Well, I know where they got the idea, but the way that they explained it was absolute genius. It was chef's kiss. And people that I know that have seen it, either they really love it or they absolutely hate it.
Yeah.
There's no in between with that movie.
Well, yeah. I personally loved it. I dug it.
I did too. I went to the movies for that. And I love horror movies, but I rarely go to the movie theater to see horror movies because I know. So I went to the theater for that when it came out with my mouth hanging open. I was like, oh my God, humanity, you're assholes.
Hey, what were your thoughts of like Paranormal Activity, the Paranormal Activity franchise? Because what are they at now? Like six or seven? Good God, that's a lot. But the first two, once again, were to me the best.
Yeah, that last one was actually pretty terrifying. The next of kin one. Mm. I don't know if you guys saw that one, but I don't want to give spoilers. But man, there were a couple of moments in that movie where I was actually like completely horrified. It's always when a monster's, I won't give away the movie if people haven't seen it, but I will give away this scene. If a monster comes up a hole and they're crawling on all fours, that gets me every time. And I don't know why it makes me so uncomfortable, but man, that scene in particular, but I loved those movies. I thought they were, you know, fantastic.
I just watched the Ring first one. Yes.
Crawling out of, that's the one where she crawls out of the TV, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
The Ring, Grudge, you mm-hmm. know, Grudge, all those movies were amazing. I mean, I loved all of that stuff. It's not just slasher flicks for me. I'm also a big Stephen King fan, so I'm glad to hear somebody else's. I mean, I'm reading a Stephen King book right now, which I know a lot of people aren't liking, which is Fairy Tale, but I think it's fantastic so far.
I just started it. Okay.
Huh. I think it's great.
Okay.
The Pet Cemetery really threw me down the stairs when I was a kid. You know, Pet Cemetery, It, although Stephen King really, really did set up our nightmares as kids in so many ways. I don't know why, you know, you'd said something that was interesting to me. People do kind of give Stephen King a bad rap, and I don't understand why. I mean, this guy has authored so many amazing books and haunted our dreams for years. How could you hate this guy?
Yeah. Some of the criticism I've heard, and I agree with it to an extent, is that sometimes he waffles the endings.
Yeah.
Sometimes. I can't say most of his books I have enjoyed. maybe 50% of them I've given a B or less, only because I got to the end. I was like, that's it. Like, come on, man. And then I've heard from other Black folk who like him that are concerned at his use of racial slurs in his books. And somebody suggested that it may be his way of showing a reader how bad this person is, because the racist is almost always evil to some greater degree. So that's his way of showing people just how awful a person this person is. And I'm like, it's almost lazy writing to do that. Just have the character do what they're going to do throughout the story. You can see how awful they're going to be. But that's one of the, for me, that's a small problematic thing. Like, I'm like you, I can't tell you how many books I haven't read. It's a small number, very small. And I've been a fan because my mom used to read them back in the day, and I've been reading probably since I was in grade school. So
I think my favorite book of his was Cujo and The Running Man.
The Running Man is excellent.
But I know
the
that
book.
Yeah, the book. Well, I like them both, but for different reasons.
The movie?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I love the movie for completely different reasons.
Yeah, the only reason those two are remotely similar is because they have the same title.
Yeah.
For the most part.
And the character names are the same. That's it.
Yeah.
That's the only similarities. I would love to see them do it according to the book. That would be a hell of a movie. But
yeah, Cujo really creeped me out when I read that one. For some reason, I don't know, just the thought of being trapped in your car with some, you know, rabid thing coming to kill you. I don't know, that just sort of got me at the time.
Yeah, I've seen the movie once, and it was years ago. I have not watched it since. I don't know why.
So for both of you, do you also read Dean Koontz? Because he's also sort of the horror genre type author who is a prolific writer of books.
I used to. He's wordy to me. Like, his books will drag. He does a lot of what's the word when a character exposition. He does a lot of exposition. It's not a whole lot of action. You don't get to action until like halfway through the book. His stuff drags. I stopped reading him a long time ago, but I remember they made a movie out of one of his, it was a series called Odd Thomas. That was the name of the character.
Yeah.
They made one movie. That was a good movie.
It starred Anton, the dude Yelchin, that played Chekhov in the reboots of Star Trek. And then Yelchin. He died shortly after they finished filming Odd Thomas.
Yep.
So, yeah. I liked a lot of his older stuff, Lightning, and a lot of those type things. But somewhere around 2000, I just quit reading him. I don't know what it was. I just didn't like him as much. Maybe it was when he started wearing the toupee. I don't know.
He has a toupee.
Yeah, you go and look at like the author's picture from a book from like 1988, and he's bald, and then all of a sudden in like 2000 there's hair.
I don't know at what point I start reading, so I need to go back and investigate, because I swear I didn't know. Interesting. So Kane, with you being a Stephen King fan, have you seen most or all the adaptations of his stuff?
I would say I've seen all of it. I also love all the short stories too, that's actually my favorite part. One thing I was going to share with you, I think the best story that I don't think they've done any adaptation on is The Man in the Black Suit. You go back, that if you go back, I get chills just thinking about it.
Yeah.
I go back and I read that story. That actual story and just the depiction of how he describes it is absolutely terrifying to me, and I have no idea why.
Now that you say that, I'm thinking, like, when I first read that, I thought of, it was a combination between that old guy in, was it the second Poltergeist movie?
Yeah.
A cross between him and the main character from Phantasm. That's who I envisioned in my mind that guy looked like. But like you said, the way he describes the guy as he walks up and what the kid felt when he saw him, like, if they ever made another Creepshow, like, movie, because I know they have the series. But if they did another movie, or even if the series, I would love to see them do that one. That's a good one.
That's what I'm dying to see, because I think that, I mean, it writes itself. If you just had a great director who could really kind of portray just how dark this story is and just follow the description, I don't think you could go wrong with that one.
Yeah. They are coming out with, it's a series called Welcome to Derry. Yeah, I'm jazzed up to see that. Did you ever watch Castle Rock?
I did, and I liked it. I was sad when it ended. Obviously, they were running into I wanted another season after all that, and there was all that buildup. But yeah, I thought that was fantastic. Really was.
Did you ever watch that, Jack?
I did not, but Heather did. So I know all about it because she informed me.
I got 2/3 of the way through the first season, and I felt, I don't know if it was just the mood I was in at the time, it felt like it was dragging, so I dropped it for a while. And then season 2 came out, so I went back and watched all of season 1. I binged it like over 2 days. And I was like, what the heck did I wait so long for? Because once you got up to speed on season 1 and you found out what's happening, I was like, and then they picked old boy to be Pennywise. I was like, this is like the most worst perfect thing they have ever done, was casting Skarsgård in those roles like that.
We have the new Salem's Lot coming out too. I know that it's not going to get a theatrical release like we wanted, but I'm still hoping that this is as good as granted, it was cheesy now watching it, but back in the days, the original Salem's Lot was also great.
I mean, compared to what's happening now, yeah, but the scene with little Danny at the window, to this day, that's why I keep my curtain shut at night. I'm not playing. I'm not playing.
You noped right out of open windows at night.
Absolutely. Like, nope. That's why I used to tell my daughter all the time. I'm like, if you don't close them curtains, I say either it's going to be the little vampire at the boy at the window, or it's going to be the purge. Close the windows.
They sold a lot of lines after that movie, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, Kane, I know that you know that time can get away when you're having great conversations, but we have gone a little long here. I'm glad you came on. It turned out to be a great conversation, lots of interesting stuff, and I appreciate you coming on to our show, and we're looking forward to being a guest on your show, which will be coming up sometime in the next 6 months to 10 years. No.
I don't forget on my calendar. Yeah, we'll definitely get everybody on again.
Yes, it was a pleasure talking to you. I'm looking forward to it as well. And literally, if we could do like somewhere between all of us, like a whole 3-parter series on horror movies, that would be fine with me. I'm just putting it out there.
I'm definitely scared. As on my show, I mean, I want to have Jack on as regular, and I can already tell that I love talking to you immediately. So I know that I want you also on the show, Kenyatta. You know, I think that we would kill it. So, I mean, yeah, you guys, I hope to have regulars on my shows, and I have quite a few shows coming up. So,
yeah, you can come back. We're not above having people on multiple times. Yes. Our friend Tim's been on many a time.
Yes. And we always, whoever we have on, we always have good convos. So, yes, looking forward to it.
Yep. So, I appreciate it. And if you appreciated finding all about the paranormal world, you could help us out by buying us a coffee and go to buymeacoffee.com/hyperfocuspods. And we would really appreciate it. So, with that, we'll catch you on the next one. Bye.
And now, folks, it's time to say goodnight. We sincerely appreciate your patronage and hope we've succeeded in bringing you an enjoyable evening of entertainment. Please drive home carefully and come back again soon. Good night.